You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services. Every Monday through Friday during the Razorbacks football training camp, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
We're kind of hitting the dog days of preseason camp. They just kind of wear on at this point in time as the team is, you know, well into their preseason, but still a little ways away from the first game. Razorbacks, I think we're 17 days out now from the first game against Rice on September the 4th, or maybe 18 days out from the game against Rice in Razorback Stadium. Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated, with me today. Also, Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com. And Scotty, at practice yesterday, you were mentioning that one of the things that stood out to you was that it was really one of the first times you guys have had a chance to see the three-man defensive front. Arkansas ran a lot of three-man fronts last year. There's been talk about, you know, maybe adding more four-man looks this season. What have you seen in those three-man fronts? And I know one of the or some of the players who have really been standing out to you are the transfers.
Yeah, I think those guys are going to make an impact right away. And Sam Pittman has said multiple times that, you know, you bring in a guy from the transfer portal, you don't do it for no reason. And in a way, you know, I'm kind of thinking that by bringing these three guys in, that Arkansas staff is in a way doing to maybe some of those younger linemen what Sam Pittman did to KJ Jefferson with Felipe Franks, and just maybe allowing those guys, allowing those guys to kind of grow underneath, you know, some of the guys that have played a lot of ball in this league. And, you know, John Ridgeway doesn't necessarily fit in that category, you know, in terms of SEC experience, but, you know, he's a guy who was, you know, really productive at the 1AA level, really physical guy that plays with an edge. I think yesterday, so Monday was, I think, the third day that we saw them working with some three-man front. The first few days were four-man, and those guys were still in the mix. So those three transfers, you know, I wrote about Trey Williams after Saturday's scrimmage. He had two or three sacks, and Sam Pittman said he may have had even more. But, you know, Markel Utsi on one of the ends, John Ridgeway in the middle, and, you know, Trey Williams on the other edge. Those are three guys that I think you're going to be able to count on, especially when you go to a three-man front. And then, you know, looking at the second team, you got Dorian Gerald, Isaiah Nichols at tackle, and then Jashad Stewart at an end. And so I think some of those younger guys are just, you know, they're able to soak up some of the knowledge and things that maybe the older guys can teach them. But Sam really likes those three guys, and they've climbed that depth chart pretty quick. And so I don't think they're super surprised by that, but, you know, I maybe didn't expect that by, you know, the start of the second full week of camp.
Clay, I was watching highlights the other day of the New York Jets preseason game, and Jonathan Marshall had a sack for a safety in that game. And it made me think back to last year, just how almost underappreciated I felt like he was in the middle of the defense. I mean, it's so easy to pay attention to the cornerbacks and the safeties and on the other end receivers and whatnot. But, you know, I've heard you say this several times, and I agree wholeheartedly that, you know, really what sets SEC teams apart is their play along the offensive and defensive lines. And finding a replacement for Marshall there in the middle of the Razorbacks defense is really important this year. And you got to like that John Ridgeway has come in and practiced so well, and he could potentially be the guy there.
Yeah, I think what you have to do at that nose tackle position, you know, Jonathan Marshall could play 60, 70, and I think maybe against LSU it was like 90 snaps. But what you want to do is take John Ridgeway, Isaiah Nichols, and Tareen Carter and split that up to 30 each. And then you got something. And you can probably get maximum effort from those guys, enroll them where they're not having to play, you know, extended snaps. And, you know, I think then you look across at other places, and when you have a defensive end with Utsi, Dorian Gerald, Eric Gregory, and the same thing goes, you're splitting up snaps and you're not leaving a guy out there forever and ever. And just remember what they had Zach Williams do a lot last year. Now you got Trey Williams, Tashad Stewart, and Zach Williams at a defensive end. Now you can take those nine guys and then add another one or two, a Marcus Miller, or there's probably another guy or two that we could name, and you could play four spots and you still have good depth. Now you're going to get banged up and you're going to lose a guy, the person that's smiling is Grant Morgan, because he knows that there's going to be something happen in front of him that requires defensive, that allows for defensive pressure and to keep blockers off of him. And I think that's what Jonathan Marshall did more than anything, is that it freed Grant Morgan to make tackles.
I think I need to give a quick shout out to Utah Man on the message board. He was watching some practice footage, I think last week, when I mentioned John Ridgeway broke into the backfield, I think for maybe a touch sack. And he mentioned that Ridgeway was still playing a little bit high. And I'm sure the coaches brought that to his attention. So I don't think that's going to play in the SEC. You got to get a little bit lower, but he's going to learn.
Yeah. That's Billy Carter, Utah Man. So we give credit where credit's due.
He's an old high school football coach, I think, in Mississippi and Georgia. Isn't that right, Clay?
That is correct. Yeah.
Scotty, one of the things I noticed in your observations yesterday, really one of the things that's been kind of beneath the surface, and we've heard it mentioned a few times, but is that battle for the number three quarterback. And you mentioned that Cade Renfrow was taking a lot of snaps with the threes yesterday. It really seems like that's kind of a toss-up at this point between Renfrow and John Stephen Jones and Lucas Coley. I think Sam Pittman said over the weekend after the scrimmage that none have really separated themselves from the others. What have you seen, though, in that battle?
Yeah, I think that position is, I think I wouldn't be surprised if Renfrow is that guy. And I wouldn't be surprised either if Renfrow maybe puts a little bit of pressure on Malik Hornsby. Like Hornsby in the practice that we have been able to see has not been, you know, the most accurate, hasn't put balls on target that often. Renfrow had a deep ball yesterday that he completed to one of the walk-on receivers. I think he went up and made a nice play in double coverage. But Renfrow, I mean, people probably get annoyed with us saying this, but like when he's throwing the ball, like he throws a pretty deep ball. And I said that about Felipe Franks last year. Like he's got a good arm. I think it's just about how he reacts when, you know, kind of the bullets are flying at him. I've liked what I've seen from Lucas Coley too. You know, he's a young guy, no experience, but, you know, he's pretty mobile. Got a pretty good arm on him. I remember watching him. He completed probably a 15 or 20 yard pass to walk on receiver Chris Harris the other day. He's shown some, I think he's shown quite a bit of poise for a kid his age in his first preseason camp. I would say that Renfrow and Lucas Coley are probably going to be battling for that number three spot. And I think Renfrow honestly could apply a little bit of pressure to Hornsby too.
The scrimmages that I watched last spring, the three scrimmages, including the red-white game, I left impressed with Renfrow. He doesn't have the wheels of really any of the other quarterbacks, even John Stephen Jones, but certainly not the wheels of Hornsby or Coley. But he's got the best arm. He looks the best in the pocket. And, you know, there's just some times, you know, on a third and eight that you got to squeeze it into the tight end who's making a cut, and he's got coverage. And I wonder if he's not that guy. He's an old Stevensville guy, and you know, the Browls, that's where they really burst onto the scene. So you wonder if Browls kind of likes the old high school pedigree there. But yeah, transfer from Ole Miss, just kind of, you know, stuck behind some really good players at Ole Miss, but he might be coming on. Now, you know, we don't see it all. And I know, Scotty, you're handcuffed with, you know, what it looks like in those early plays, but I think they're going to keep rolling those three guys until one of them just says, I'm the guy. And I mean, even, you know, with Hornsby, there's probably some heat there. That's what they want, is to find one of those other three that pushes Hornsby, and then you got something, you know, that you got some true competition.
Stephenville High School also has maybe the loudest noisemakers of anybody I've ever seen.
Is that in
high
right?
School. Yeah. It's like, I don't even know what you would call it. It's these round barrels that they spin, and they've got, I guess, like metal bearings or something in them, and makes this incredibly loud noise. I remember watching them quite a bit when Art Briles was the coach there. Chad Morris, of course, was the coach there too, and at Stephenville. Scotty, heard a lot yesterday about the start of practice. They called it the fastball start. How would you describe that?
Yeah, so basically it's the one offense against the one defense, and basically the one offense gets to run four plays. And then after that fourth play, you send on the twos. After four plays, you send on the threes. And then you get right into some individual stuff. So I think it's just a way to, you know, maybe see if you're carrying over some things from the previous day, and then, you know, see if you retain some of that information, see if it can stick. And then I think it's just, you know, you're kind of experimenting at some, you know, you're kind of experimenting with some different looks. Remember, I think Arkansas to this, prior to yesterday, so Monday, the offense had always sent out, you know, quarterback, running back, three receivers, tight end. But yesterday, you know, they sent out a four receiver look with no tight end. So just doing a little bit of experimenting. You know, you want to get your best guys on the field. I think Hudson Henry might have been a little bit limited yesterday. I think he had a little bit of a wrap on his hand, on his right hand. So they sent Trey Knox, Davion Warren, Jaquelin Crawford, Traylon Burks out at receiver. That's getting, you know, three of your, I guess Jaquelin Crawford's making a push, because he's been running with the ones a lot in those fastball starts. So just getting all the weapons you can on the field.
That's some speed too, isn't it, Scotty? I mean, that just,
yeah, no doubt about
weapons.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw in the one-on-ones too, Traylon Burks was matched up with Joe Fouché a couple times. And I really believe Joe Fouché is a good DB, but it's next to impossible to cover Traylon Burks right now.
Scotty, do you see a little more speed from Traylon? You know, he dropped a little weight since the spring. You know, the idea is that his cardio is better. But is that translated to maybe a little more quickness off the ball?
Yeah, I think so. And I think he's a little bit stronger too, I would say, because Joe is not a light guy. Joe is a guy that'll, I mean, he's a headhunter, and he's got some girth to him. But Traylon's just, he's strong and he's quick. And both of those routes that I saw him beat Joe on were deep balls. I mean, and he's sprinting all the way to the end zone, really. And, you know, he's a big, strong guy. He created some pretty good separation. Just, you know, just a little light extension of the arm is all the separation that he got. And that's really all he needs.
Yeah, I noticed that in the scrimmage Saturday that they had a lot of pass interference calls, and that they trying to clean that up. And Traylon is that he has to, what you just described, just a little bit of a push, a hold off, that you do more than that and it's going to be a flag. I think that's probably was a point of emphasis this week after what they found out in the scrimmage, that an SEC referee is going to call that little shove.
It's typing in the rosters for our Hogs Illustrated scouting reports yesterday, and it stood out to me that Burks is listed about 10 pounds lighter than he was, you know, for the last game last season. So it'll be interesting to see how much different he plays. The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Each day this week, we are going to continue our position analysis, and today we'll continue with the special teams. Scott Fountain, the Razorbacks' second-year special teams coordinator, spoke to media yesterday, and here were some highlights from what he had to say.
How difficult is it to sort through return men when, I mean, I can't imagine you guys go live very often in that. How difficult is that?
Right. So, you know, most places I've been, the head coaches are kind of against that, and particularly with kickoff return, because it's such a big collision. So we try to make it as real as we can with full speed action and tagging off. And that's really what you can do. Now we may come out in the next scrimmage, particularly with our punt returners, and do a tackle with it, you know. And typically if you tackle, you might get three reps for that, but you just don't get a lot of opportunities with that. But we try to do things that make the kids feel like there's pressure around them. So, you know, when you're catching a punt, you can have people whacking at them with bags. We have a lot of drills where some competitive drills that we do to try to have some battles going on with 4-on-4 and have guys in their face and stuff, and really focus on fielding the football, but really knowing what they'll do after they catch it. I mean, you just got to try to get a feel in these live scrimmages without tackling and hope you're right on it.
I know you don't tackle in practice much, I wouldn't think, on special teams, but how do you feel about your coverage teams? And would you put more starters on there? Or just how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, we are certainly doing that, and Pittman's letting us use those guys. And, you know, last year, our coverage units, what helped us in kickoff was we had video that could kick it out some, right? So 70%, 7 out of 10, you ain't got to cover, right, technically. And the punt world is not the case. And I just feel like last year we were doing a lot of developing with guys, and you had this COVID issue going on. But, you know, our kids, man, they worked so hard. I'm real pleased where we're at on our coverage units. And we're putting our best players. I mean, we're not keeping anybody off of our coverage units, you know. And so, I mean, I think you're going to see a better coverage unit out there this year. And I think kids have a better, little bit better concept of what we're trying to do.
Clay, I thought Nate Allen had a good line of questioning in that press conference yesterday, and we didn't hear it there, but it was basically to the point, and I had the same thoughts last year, that I thought the special teams, yeah, they struggled a year ago, but I also thought that maybe it was a little unfair to grade Scott Fountain last year because of COVID and the effects that it had on the special teams. I mean, in special teams, a lot of times you're not playing your frontline players. And then when you have the players having to sit out last season because of quarantine or because of positive cases or whatever the case might be, then it starts to pull players away from those special teams. And I thought you might've seen that last year quite a bit. And I thought that might've contributed to some of the struggles that they had a year ago.
Yeah. The issue is that you're working on special teams all week, but you don't really know which one of those players are going to be available because you take the COVID test Thursday night, then you set your roster on Friday. And a lot of the it seems like early in the season, a lot of the problems with COVID was in the defensive secondary. Well, all those guys are special team players. They play on your coverage teams, offense, they're your gunners, they're your inside release guys, on punt coverage, and then they're the two outside guys on both sides of your kickoff coverage. And then, you're down to two or three corners, and they're not going to get any rest on the field. And then you also got them on your cover teams. And they're the critical guys in punt block protection. They've got to hold somebody up so that your three-man wedge can do their job. So I knew what they were dealing with all year with the changing look of the roster because of COVID. And I'm sure they were pulling their hair out, on Friday morning. All right, okay, we don't have this guy, and this guy. So now we're going to make sure and fill our special team spots with this guy, and this guy. And then, by the way, these players that didn't even work this week on special teams, you're the backups, and you're filling this spot and this spot. And everybody else was having the same problems. I'm talking about schools in the SEC. It was a year of special teams mistakes. And I think we're past that, hopefully, with the vaccination, but it still goes to the point of special teams requires details, and it requires lots of planning. And, I bet they're better in it, and I bet their protections are better, which a lot of people are talking about return people, but protections is really where I thought they struggled last year.
And I think it requires depth. Teams like Alabama, Georgia, Auburn, those seem like those are some of the better teams and special teams every year. And I've always thought it was because of the depth. And I'll give Scott Fountain credit for something a year ago. I thought that when a problem arose, they did a good job of correcting it. So for instance, Scotty, we talked yesterday about Treylon Burks in the opening game, letting the ball hit the ground. Well, that wasn't a problem, after say week three. There were problems with the holders. They put Jack Lindsey back in and that corrected the holding problem, problem with punt protection. It seemed like that got better over the last six or seven games. But I go back to, I think it was a really hard year for special teams. And I thought something that was interesting that Fountain said yesterday was that before the Auburn game, there were eight special team starters who were knocked out just before they made the trip.
Yeah, for sure. And that was one of the games that Arkansas had a punt blocked, right? Like he may have had a guy, in his line, who was maybe a third or fourth option for that spot, just because maybe the three guys that were in front of him got knocked out. I can't imagine what the headache was just trying to figure out who you're going to place where, and trying to be cognizant of, you know, maybe this guy's on a couple of other teams, as Fountain likes to call it, and maybe he's getting too much, maybe he's getting a few too many reps. That had to be just a giant headache. But protection is a big deal. Arkansas got two punts blocked, I think, last year, and Georgia and Auburn, and both of them led to scores. So, I mean, I'm with Clay. I think a lot of your special teams is about depth. I think you've got a lot of guys in the defensive secondary, like Clay mentioned, that end up, you know, playing on special teams. And Greg Brooks is kind of a neat name to see kind of thrown into this mix at punt return. Like, he's a kind of a jitterbug guy that maybe can give them some of the elusiveness that they're looking for. Bryce Stevens too. I went back and read one of Richard Davenport's old stories, and he returned four punts for touchdowns as a junior at his high school. So they've got some options there. And like you mentioned, Matt, like they're whenever a problem does come up, they are not hesitant to try new blood in new places. I think they're all of the guys, I believe, that are back for punt return this year. I don't think that they've done it in a college game. So that's something to keep an eye on. But I don't have any doubts that they're looking for somebody to give them a little bit of pop, because a lot of the guys on this Arkansas roster, like I wrote yesterday, were probably in elementary school or junior high the last time Arkansas took a punt to the house.
Now, when you look at the depth at safety, guys that maybe not are listed as starters, you know, like a Malik Chavis and a Jaden Johnson, a Trent Gordon, a Miles Slusher, Kari Johnson. I mean, none of these guys are listed as starters right now. Devin Bush, they're all going to be key players on special teams. And I think there's some talent in that area. And I think that where this roster has really been upgraded. And, you know, there's a few like Greg Brooks and Ladarius Bishop that are going to be return guys, but all those others that I mentioned, they're going to be cover guys, and they're going to be gunners, and they're going to be the outside guys on kickoff coverage. So I think there's a good trend developing there. And I think that when you see them take a few more corners or a few more safeties in recruiting, and you think, well, that's you're overloading an area. Barry Odom will tell you, as being an old head coach, you need those guys for special teams. And I think that's going to serve them well this year.
Let's talk about the kicking game for a minute. Fountain didn't want to concede the starting job to Cam Little just yet, but reading the tea leaves, Scotty, it sure seems like the freshman from Oklahoma is going to be their starting kicker. He's been the most impressive. I even thought back in the spring, you know, what we saw, he was their most consistent kicker, and that's carried over this year. And what we've learned is that he's added about, what, 15, 18 pounds, I think, and that's added to maybe some leg strength for him.
Yeah, Scott Fountain told a pretty funny story about Cam, you know, when he was on the recruiting trail trying to get this kid committed and signed. He was one of the last – Cam Little was one of the last prospects that Scott Fountain saw in person. And he goes to the high school. He sees Cam Little walk out of the weight room, and he just sees his arms are just there. He said they're that big around, which you can imagine how small they were. And he was, you know, pretty honest. He said he was kind of turned off by it. But the kid is, he's gotten in the weight room. He's taken that pretty seriously. And it's fine if a kicker adds some upper body strength, like you transfer that weight up, down through the ball. And that, I think that's helped Cam a lot. I asked Sam Pittman after the scrimmage, I was like, what is it about, you know, Cam Little's makeup that makes him as consistent as he is? And Sam jokingly was like, he's pretty good at putting the ball through those two pipes. And so I think he's easily been the most consistent guy. It would be kind of stunning at this point if he's not their day one kicker. I think he's got a lot of trust in Vito Calvaruso too. Just adding things year after year after year, you know, he can be you know, kickoff wise, he's like 70% putting it through the back of the end zone, which is really good. Could obviously stand some improvement there, but, you know, he's adding things like sky left, sky right, deep left, you know, deep right. You know, he's adding things here and there. They can make him very, very valuable.
I think the most important thing you can do in camp with special teams is have a competition at kicker. And, you know, when you talk about Cam Little, Vito Calvaruso, and then also Matthew Phillips. Nobody really mentions him that much, but I know he had a good spring, and I think he's talented too. And it's just important that you have several kickers, and when, you know, when you're not in scrimmage situations in other areas, so you have a rotation, you don't wear a guy out, and that there's somebody behind you that's pushing you. And I think they've got that right now, and I think that's the improvement that this team has made in so many areas, that there's just more guys. There's not just one punter. I mean, you know, it's Reed Bauer and Sam Loy. I mean, I think that, and even Phillips can punt too. So they've got some depth at these kicking positions that I think enhances their competition.
Sam Loy has been out with an injury for, I don't know how long, but for, I would say the majority of preseason camp, it seems like Reed Bauer is going to be their punter for now. You know, Loy may come back and beat him out. But we also saw a lot last year of them using those two punters in different situations where they felt like, you know, a different scenario would favor one over the other. We mentioned kickoff returns yesterday. Scotty, I thought Tom made a really interesting point that it's a different day, and that you may not see Davion Warren, who's been their primary kickoff returner for 4 years. You may not even see him in that position this year. They're trying out some different players. We mentioned Miles Slusher, Josh Oglesby, who I think there's a lot of intrigue about because he's come over from the track team. What have you seen in the kickoff return area?
Yeah, that's an interesting spot. I think Josh Oglesby might be just perfect for that role. Probably not your starter at running back. He might not be your number two, just because you feel like you need a little bit of a bigger bodied back at tailback to complement Traylon Smith. So I think he could be, you know, tailor made for that. He's a burner. I mean, if you're fast enough to run for Arkansas's track program, I think that's a pretty good spot to put you. Give you the ability to maybe pick up an extra 8 to 10 yards. Just to give your offense just a little bit more cushion, because Arkansas's starting field position, I feel like in the past, it's not been great. Like, you're somewhere between, you know, like the 12 and the 20 yard line much more often than not. And I think a guy like Josh Oglesby can make guys miss. He can turn a corner, like slip through a little crease. And I think Ladarius Bishop might be another intriguing option. I'm kind of thinking that he's holding on to that top cornerback spot opposite Monteric Brown. So we may not see Day-Day, you know, returning kickoffs. But another guy that, you know, Sam Carter tells him all the time, he's the fastest guy on the field. And so use it to your advantage. And obviously there's a lot more to returning kickoffs than just speed, obviously. But yeah, they got some interesting options back there. I'd like to see what Miles Slusher looks like returning kicks. I mean, we don't get to see any of that stuff. So it'll probably be, you know, we'll be figuring it out, you know, maybe the first play of the season. I think they've got some guys that can make some things happen.
Yeah. I like the phrase Day-Day just turned out the lights, right? You know, we could hear that this year on a kickoff return. And, you know, like you say, Scotty, it's, you know, speed kills in the SEC. And it looks like they're inserting speed at some of those special teams places. And it's the nature of what you see week in and week out at in the SEC. And you just ache to have that dangerous guy. And I wouldn't rule out at some point that Devion Warren is back there returning kickoffs. And, you know, his 2017 is the most kickoff yard, third most in school history. Now, that's with a lot of kickoff returns. You know, you don't, if you're returning a lot of kickoff returns, that means you're giving up a lot of touchdowns. So that's not a good sign. But coming back from an ACL, they're probably a little reluctant to stick him back there right off the bat. But I think he'll be begging for that. you know, second, third, fourth game, you might see Warren back there too.
Let's finish with this. I'm always fascinated to hear strategy, recruiting strategy. And I thought it was really interesting to hear Fountain talk yesterday about how they go out and recruit special teams players and primarily, Clay, how they allocate three scholarships to specialists. He said, you know, that was something that he picked up from Auburn and from Georgia, places that he had coached prior to Arkansas. I go back and I think about all the great Arkansas teams. I mean, you think about Frank Broyles. They had one of the great punt return units in the history of college football with players like Lance Allworth and Martine Bircher and Ken Hatfield. And through the, you know, the 70s and 80s, they it was a kicking factory here at the U of A with players like Steve Little and Ishward Onyez. And, you know, the list just goes on and on. I'd like to get your thoughts about that, though, Clay. How special teams can change the identity of a team. You know, it can really flip games. And how Arkansas has really put an emphasis on this by having a full-time special teams coordinator that you don't see a lot of schools have. And then I was really interested to hear them talk, too, about how having scholarships that you can allocate to specialists really helps you in recruiting because, you know, there aren't a lot of schools that are out there offering a full scholarship to a kicker.
Yeah, I think what Scott Fountain does is he's fully dedicated to recruit special team guys. And you can talk somebody into walking on, but having some scholarships in his back pocket and the head coach listening to him, I mean, they're best friends. They live next door to each other in the same cul-de-sac at Georgia. I mean, and he was the first guy that really had a job on this staff because he had already said, hey, if I get a job, this was several weeks out, if I get this Arkansas job, you're coming with me, right? And I think that it's important to note that his background wasn't just coaching special teams. It was on the field and has some background as an offensive line coach. So, I mean, he and Sam Pittman are in lockstep. They know what's going on. Punters and kickers have to be recruited. They don't just show up. And I think Frank Broyles knew that, and I think Lou Holtz knew that. And that's why they were never short of kickers, is that you spend your the whole year looking at tape. Somebody's doing that. Somebody's checking that. And at Arkansas, it is Scott Fountain every time you know, there's a kicking camp. They know the details around the country, how those kickers have done. And Scott Fountain is staying on the phone with them. And I know that special teams are going to improve at Arkansas. And I'm firmly in belief that Scott Fountain is an asset to this staff.
Go to wholehogsports.com to read more on the Razorbacks preseason. Clay had a great column over the weekend about Arkansas not overlooking Rice. While they look ahead to that big game against Texas in week two, go give that a read. We will be back with another podcast tomorrow. Until then, hope you visit us at the website. Have a good day, everyone.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.